The next Bible reading is from Matthew 27, verses 11 to 26. Meanwhile, Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "You have said so," Jesus replied. When he was accused by the chief priests and the elders, he gave no answer. Then Pilate asked him, "Don't you hear the testimony that they are bringing against you?" But Jesus made no reply, not even to a single charge, to the great amazement of the governor. Now it was the governor's custom at the festival to release a prisoner chosen by the crowd. At the time, they had a well-known prisoner whose name was Jesus Barabbas. So when the crowd had gathered, Pilate asked them, "Which one do you want me to release to you? Jesus Barabbas or Jesus who is called the Messiah?" For he knew it was out of self-interest that they had handed Jesus over to him. While Pilate was sitting on the judge's seat, his wife sent him this message: "Don't have anything to do with that innocent man, for I have suffered a great deal today in a dream because of him." But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas and to have Jesus executed. "Which of the two do you want me to release to you?" asked the governor. "Barabbas," they answered. "What shall I do then with Jesus, who is called the Messiah?" Pilate asked. They all answered, "Crucify him." "Why? What crime has he committed?" asked Pilate. But they shouted all the louder, "Crucify him." When Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere, but that instead an uproar was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the crowd. "I am innocent of this man's blood," he said. "It is your responsibility." All the people answered, "His blood is on us and on our children." Then he released Barabbas to them, but he had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified.
Well, good morning, everyone. My name's David, and it's great to be here with you this morning. I'd love to share a story with you about me and my workmate when I was working as a physio. We usually get to the office pretty early. We'll make coffee together and then catch up on what we did last night. And after that, we'd hop on this one computer we shared. And the first thing we do is go on this website called Ausbargen. Now, if you're not familiar with this website, it's one of Australia's biggest and largest bargain hunting community. People will post the latest or upcoming deals, coupon codes, vouchers, basically anything that's a bargain. Well, that would be the first thing we did every morning working together, without fail. And it didn't occur to me that we were doing this every morning for a while. So one day I said to my friend, "Wow, we really love this website, hey." And he says, "Yeah, it's so good. Who doesn't love a bargain?" And I thought, yeah, true. Who doesn't love a bargain? It's so good to grab something on discount, and it's even better when it's free. Will we even tell our family and friends about it? We might even tell strangers about it. And that's what Ausbargen's all about. Strangers across Australia posting bargains to help each other because it's so good. I mean, it's so good that it's worth following the website and checking it every day. Well, but I wonder, what if we considered Jesus in a similar way? Is he worth following and checking every day? Does Jesus give us any deals that's worth it? Is it worth it to the point that we'll share it with our family, our friends, or even strangers? Well, today we're reading through Matthew 27, and we haven't read through the whole chapter yet, but the big question up to this point is, can Jesus do anything good for me? And so with that big question in mind, I'd really like for us to immerse ourselves into what took place in the passage that Tessa just read out for us, and to realize what this means for all of us today. And by the end, we'll be able to answer the big question for today. Let's have a look at what's happening here in verses 11 to 14. Well, picture this for a moment. Jesus is on trial. He's been accused of a crime. He's standing before Pilate, who's the governor and the judge for this trial. Now the religious leaders, the chief priests and elders, for religious reasons, they're actually not in the courtroom. They're outside. So Pilate the judge would have had to go back and forth between Jesus and these religious leaders. And the religious leaders, they've been planning and scheming to have Jesus arrested and killed. They've got him arrested. Now they need to get him killed. So they accuse Jesus of claiming to be king of the Jews. Now, that's a serious accusation, because for anyone to claim that they're king of something during that time in the Roman Empire, it's to challenge Caesar's authority. It's a political threat. For example, let's say you lived in North Korea. It's as if you were to say, oh, forget about Kim Jong-un. I'm going to be the next president of North Korea. Well, I'm sure Kim Jong-un wouldn't be too happy, and I'm sure there'll be serious consequences for it. So a serious accusation like that needs to be addressed. And that's exactly what Pilate's doing. He asked Jesus in verse 11, are you the king of the Jews? To which he replies in the same verse, what, you have said so? Now, Jesus didn't say yes, but he didn't say no either. In a way, he said, if that's what you think, he's leaving it up to Pilate to make that judgment. And Pilate must judge Jesus as guilty or innocent based on what he knows. But what does he know? Well, in fact, Pilate believes Jesus is innocent. There are three hints in verses 14, 18, and 19 that show this. Let's look at verse 14. While the chief priests and elders were accusing Jesus of more things, he stayed silent, and Pilate was amazed. Why is he amazed and not suspicious? Well, if anything, silence makes us think Jesus is guilty. But that's only if the evidence shows that Jesus is guilty. Then it's understandable why Jesus is silent, because he wouldn't say anything to incriminate himself. But we know that's not the case, because the chief priests and elders have no solid evidence. They're making up lies and falsely accusing Jesus of a crime he didn't commit. And Pilate, seeing that there is no evidence, believes Jesus is innocent. And he's amazed because these religious leaders are falsely accusing an innocent man, and instead of defending himself, Jesus says nothing. That's what amazes Pilate, Jesus' silence. Well, the next clue that Pilate believes Jesus is innocent is in verse 18. Pilate knew that it was out of self-interest that the chief priests and elders had handed Jesus over to him. Well, Pilate knew the chief priests and elders were jealous of the influence Jesus had, because they started to lose their own influence in society. That would have meant losing their privileges, their power, their control, their popularity. So they came up with lies to accuse Jesus and have him arrested. That's the clue that Pilate believes Jesus is innocent. But that's not the only evidence. Look at verse 19. Pilate's wife warned him, "Don't have anything to do with that innocent man, for I have suffered a great deal today in a dream because of him." Don't have anything to do with that innocent man. How does she know Jesus is innocent? Well, because she saw it in her dream. The Romans, they saw dreams as a way for the gods to communicate with them. So Pilate's wife was convinced that Jesus was innocent because she believed it was a message from God. Not only does Pilate know that Jesus is innocent, but even his wife knows. But even as we read along here, we see that Jesus is innocent too. Well, at this point in the trial, there's two big things we can't ignore. Firstly, why is Jesus staying silent? I mean, if he's innocent, why is he not defending himself? Why is he staying silent? Keep that thought for now. I promise we'll come back to it soon. And here's the second big thing we can't ignore. What's Pilate going to do now? He knows Jesus is innocent. He can't find anything wrong with Jesus. So is Pilate going to release him? After all, that would be the right thing to do, wouldn't it? Well, let's find out. As we move along onto verses 15 to 17, we see that by now there's a rowdy crowd gathered outside the trial. It also happens to be Passover, which is a Jewish festival celebrated once a year. And during Passover, the governor would release a prisoner chosen by the crowd. It was a way the Roman Empire would keep the peace with the Jews. And at this point, Jesus is now considered a prisoner. And Pilate knows that if he asked the chief priests and elders who they would pick to release, they wouldn't pick Jesus. So he ignores them and asks the crowd outside instead, hoping that they would do the right thing and pick Jesus, who's innocent, to be released. So Pilate presents two people for the crowd and asks them to choose. On the one hand, we've got Barabbas, who's a criminal. He's broken a lot of laws. He's guilty. This man is already sentenced to death. On the other hand, we've got Jesus, who's not a criminal. He hasn't broken any laws. He's innocent. This man shouldn't even have to be here. Well, what we see here then are two people, one clearly guilty and one clearly innocent. Who's the crowd going to pick to release? Well, Pilate asks again in verse 21, which of the two do you want me to release to you? Well, Barabbas, the crowd replied, the guilty one. Let's set him free. Well, what about Jesus? What should I do with him? Well, crucify him, the crowd replied. Give him the death sentence. Wait, what? Now, Pilate's expecting them to pick Jesus, the innocent one, to be released. But they've gone and picked the guilty one to be released. Well, not only that, but they want the innocent man to be humiliated and killed. Well, why did they do that? Well, we see why in verse 20. The chief priests and elders were going around persuading the crowd to release Barabbas and to have Jesus crucified. They're still at it, working hard with their scheming and planning to kill Jesus, the innocent one. Well, obviously, Pilate, he's shocked at the decision. We're shocked too. I mean, why? What crime has he committed? Verse 23. Pilate knows Jesus is innocent. Why crucify him? But even then, the crowd didn't answer him. They shouted even louder, crucify him. Well, this wasn't getting anywhere. It's getting restless and too intense. It looks like a riot might break out soon. And Pilate's reputation and competency to maintain peace as governor, it's on the line. Is he going to risk his reputation and do the right thing, which is to release Jesus? Or is he going to do what's best for him, which is to sentence an innocent man to death? Well, let's see his decision in verse 24. Well, he took water and washed his hands in front of the crowd. I am innocent of this man's blood, he said. It is your responsibility. Well, washing his hands was a way of saying, I'm not responsible. But is he really not responsible? He had enough evidence to believe Jesus is innocent. He had power to do what was right. But he chose not to. He's scared of ruining his reputation as governor. And so Pilate deflects the responsibility to the crowd, and that's it. Well, that answers one of the big things we can't ignore earlier. Is Pilate going to release Jesus? No. Verse 26, he's released Barabbas instead. Barabbas, who was already sentenced to death, gets to walk free, knowing that an innocent man swapped places with him. And Pilate sentenced Jesus to be crucified. But it was not a simple death sentence. In fact, Pilate had sent Jesus to be humiliated, to be flogged to the point of being shredded, to be mocked, stripped naked, spat on, beaten, and then having to walk 1 kilometer in front of the whole city, being publicly humiliated, and carrying a 50-kilo wooden cross on his shoulders, only for him to be nailed to the cross and die as an innocent man. I remember reading this again recently, feeling frustrated and so angry at how unfair this event unfolded. I mean, Barabbas shouldn't have swapped places with Jesus and went away for free. He should be the one on that cross, not Jesus. He should have had integrity and said, no, don't crucify Jesus. I did the crime, I'll do the time. I mean, if I was Barabbas, that's what I would have done. I mean, I'd like to think I would say this. you know, talk big and act big with integrity. But let's be real, I'm not all that. I'm not a hero. Because in the moment, if someone's willing to swap places with me, I'll take it to spare my own life. But then I think about it, I'm not really like Barabbas, right? I mean, of course not. I've never killed anyone. I've never robbed anyone either. I've told a few white lies here and there, stolen a couple of pens from classmates in sixth grade. But that never hurt anybody. I mean, I've done some bad things too, things that have hurt other people. You know, I remember getting into a fight with someone in school and the guy got beat up pretty bad. But I thought he deserved it though, because he started on me first, so I retaliated. But don't worry about that, don't worry, because I actually give to charity sometimes too, and that's a good thing, right? So I think I'm a pretty good person overall. I mean, if we asked Barabbas whether he thought he was guilty, he'd probably say, nah, of course not. I did what was right for my people. I'm fighting against the Roman Empire, and they're oppressing me and my people. I'm like Robin Hood for my people. I mean, yeah, I had to break some laws and kill and rob people. I mean, that was never part of my plan, though. I didn't intend to kill and rob people. And yeah, I know God told us not to rob and murder, but hey, I did what was good for my people. The good outweighs the bad. So I'm a pretty good person overall. It's funny that Barabbas and I are similar in so many ways. We're both trying to justify our wrongs to be right. But again, I don't feel like I'm Barabbas. I'm no Mother Teresa either, but I'm no Barabbas. But one day I heard someone say this, and he asked a hypothetical question. Hey, if we attached a GoPro on you for the next week, and it captured everything you did, all your actions, even those things you do when no one's looking, all your words, even those little comments you say when no one else hears, all your thoughts, even those things inside your head, not just things that are outside, but inside too, whatever's on your heart and mind, 24/7, would you be keen to watch it together next week? Well, of course not. That's embarrassing. The amount of things I say and do, let alone think. I mean, if you watched my footage and knew all these things, you wouldn't want to be around me at all. But wait, let's stretch this example a bit further. What if we put a GoPro on Jesus and then we can compare my footage with his footage? Would I watch it? You bet I won't. It'll be so shameful and embarrassing because Jesus is perfect. His footage is going to be flawless. He's innocent and spotless in his thoughts, words, and actions. It'll only show how bad my thoughts, words, and actions will be. And then it struck me. Hang on. I'm trying to justify the wrong things I did. The white lies, stolen pens, the fist fights. White lies or malicious lies, I've lied. Stolen pens or stolen time at work, I've stolen. Getting into fights or arguing with my mum, I've fought. And maybe the reason I've given to charity is because it validates me in a way that makes me look good. I'm so prideful. I'm so corrupt. I'm guilty. I mean, I'm trying so hard to prove that I'm not guilty, but when compared to Jesus, who is perfect and innocent, I'm guilty. I'm guilty before God. I'm Barabbas. I'm Barabbas in this story. And like Barabbas, there's a penalty that I must pay for. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm the only person in this gym right now who's lied, stolen, or fought, among other things. Maybe that's not true for you. Maybe it is. You might relate to me in that way. But I wonder, what if all of us compared our GoPro footage with Jesus' footage? What if we compare our actions, our words, our thoughts? What if we compare our hearts and minds with Jesus? All of the footage, 24/7. How would that look? What if it's not just me, but all of us are Barabbas? I know that sounds like a punch to the gut, and it really feels like that. To hear that we're all guilty and there's a penalty for it. But friends, look at Barabbas. Yes, he was guilty and he was going to pay for his penalty, but that's no longer true for him anymore, is it? He's no longer guilty and he didn't even pay his penalty. He got to walk away for free as a free man. Why? Because Jesus swapped places with Barabbas. He swapped places to pay Barabbas' penalty. Jesus paid the penalty on the cross so that Barabbas didn't have to. Barabbas had been freed by Jesus, an innocent man to die in the place of the guilty. That was the most important and greatest news of the time. But friends, it still is the most important and greatest news for us today. How? Well, can I share another story with you? When I was young, I liked watching and playing basketball. I actually wanted to play in the NBA and be like my favorite player. I wanted to be like Dwayne Wade. There he is. In fact, I wanted to be him because I thought he was living the good life. He got to play basketball. He got big money for it. He got to fly in a private jet and come home with a meal ready for him, cooked by a private chef. But here I am, stuck in school, doing homework and assignments. I mean, it was so boring. It was terrible. If I could swap places with Dwayne Wade for one day, that would be perfect. That would be a dream. But if you notice here, I want to swap what's good for me, which is to play basketball, get paid for it, have a private jet, and chef. Well, on the other hand, Dwayne Wade can have what's bad for him, you know, doing my homework and assignments and go to school. I naturally want what's good for me. But Jesus is different. He was willing to swap places with us and have what was bad for him and give us what is good. The bad for him was to pay our penalty that we should have paid for. The good for us is that we don't have to pay that penalty anymore because God has done it already. He promised to forgive all the wrong things we've done and even promised us that we can live forever. In a new world where there's no more evil, a new world where it's perfect and good. But how does one receive these promises? By believing in what Jesus has done on the cross. Who has done the work already? Who swapped places with us? Friends, that's the greatest and most important news for us today. If you're not a believer, if you're here to know more about Jesus, can I say that we're really glad to have you here today? If you've got any questions after this, please come and ask me or Scott. Or if you came with a friend who's a believer, you can ask them too. Ask them why and how they came to believe. But I'd like to share that we have what's called the Life Series coming up in May. We're convinced that life with Jesus is totally worth it. And that Life Series, we look into who Jesus is and what life with him is all about. It's a space where you can ask any questions about Jesus, and it's a great opportunity to explore more about him. You can even kick back and take it all in if you don't feel like asking questions. But Scott's going to give more details about it in a moment. But friends, I want to stress that this is the greatest and most important news today. This is a bargain worth thinking about. It's even worth sharing with your family, your friends, or even strangers. It's a bargain for the forgiveness of every wrong thing we've ever done. For us, it's free. But for God, it wasn't cheap. It was very costly. For God, it cost him his life on the cross. Remember the big question we started off with earlier? Can Jesus do anything good for me? Yes, he can. Has he done it? Yes, he has. He swapped places with us. We don't have to pay the penalty anymore because God promised us that he will forgive. God has always been at work in saving us. He's the one that planned to rescue us, and he's the one that swapped places with us. Jesus paid the penalty already. It was nothing that we did that saved us. It was God all along. This is the reason Jesus stayed silent. Remember the big thing we can't ignore earlier? Why is Jesus staying silent? Why didn't he defend himself when he's innocent? He stayed silent on purpose. He stayed silent so that he could swap places with us, so that we don't have to pay the penalty. He loves us so much that he died in our place. We've been freed. We can trust that Jesus can do something good for us, and let's trust that he has done something very good for us. Well, let me pray. Our Father in heaven, we thank you for your Son Jesus, who has paid our penalty so that we don't have to pay for it anymore. We thank you that you have done the work already and that there's nothing else we can do to save ourselves but to believe in Jesus, who has already done it. We thank you that you have given us this free gift of forgiveness, and though it's free for us, we realize it was costly for you. Father, it costs you your perfect and innocent Son, Jesus. Help us to trust and appreciate what you've done for us. We thank you again and pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.